the goal shifted further in the funnel. So before it was, okay, we need a conversion. So we need a transaction, and that's it. And then we started looking at retention more. And then we started looking at, okay, so who are the top 5% of power users? And then if you have a feedback loop from the power users back to your ads, I think that's growth hacking.
Hi, this time the GrowTribute podcast is about growth hacking your business and your life. And therefore, I invited the entrepreneur Ewout Uphoff. Ewout and I go way back. We've been to law school together, but we both didn't end up as lawyers, but as entrepreneurs. Ewout is a growth marketer and he conducts personal experiments to improve 1% every single day. He co-founded Polaris Growth, an e-commerce growth marketing agency that helps scale-ups to grow faster. I will talk with Ewout about a big variety of topics in this podcast. Firstly, I will talk with him how he became an entrepreneur from law school. I will also talk with him about the upsides and the downsides of being a digital nomad. Ewout has been a digital nomad for years and he's lived in several countries. And I will talk about him how he improves his health every single day. For instance, he stopped drinking alcohol. On another note, I will speak with him about protecting your personal data better. He knows a lot about it. And he talks about experience because he has been hacked. And finally, I will talk with him about how he's growing on a financial level as well. He aims to be financial independent in a few years from now, and he's taking measures to get there. So, a lot of topics, I think a lot of topics to be inspired by and to learn from, and I would say, enjoy.
So, Ewout, great to have you here in the GrowTribute podcast. I think this is a very special interview for me, since we've known each other for so long, and so much has happened in the past 10, 12 years. Yeah, we both went to law school and then went, in the end, yeah, in totally different path forward. We both went into entrepreneurship. I think you already, yeah, quite soon after law school. Please share a little bit more about your journey and how you ended up in growth marketing, having an agency there.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for having me, Leonard. So I studied law and philosophy, and because I couldn't join all of the courses and lectures at the same time, I had to basically start growth hacking back then. So I had to think of, okay, what's the goal here in passing an exam and take it from there. So while I was in university, I did a lot of extracurricular activities, which was really fun. And one of them was a tutoring company. So we started that. Based on that, I got in first contact with being an entrepreneur, and that was really fun. So my friends were tutoring high school students in Rotterdam, and we were managing that. So that was really cool. Based on that, I had an idea of setting up a website selling smartphone insurances. And then my flatmate said, well, I can develop a website, so let's take it from there. So that's how we started. So it was just a fun project. We build a website and then. So we started reading up on digital marketing, on SEA and SEO. And we learned it in a very playful manner. So that was really fun. We would label our ads as mine or my co-founders. And then we'd play a game. So after 2 weeks, we would look at the ads. And then the loser had to pay a crate of beer to the winner. So... playing games like that, and I think I lost twice, and then I started reading up on it, so how does this actually work? So that's how it started. So it was just a fun side project. Those websites grew. We sold the websites. We started doing digital marketing for others. And then when I was doing my master's, it was a full-time business. And the business moved to Amsterdam because we became part of a larger media company. So we set up their e-commerce branch.
You were really pulled into entrepreneurship based on passion, fun, and suddenly you were acquired by an Amsterdam-based organization, and you were
not
still
really acquired, but yeah, we became part of them. Yeah, so it was all serendipity, basically. I didn't have a plan to become an entrepreneur. The University of Rotterdam is strong in economics and entrepreneurship. That was not why I chose the city. It was just by sheer accident that I started as an entrepreneur, and I love it ever since.
And how did it go from there? Because you said you were already thinking of kind of hacks to study faster, get better grades, and probably do a lot of entrepreneurship on the side. The seed of growth hacking was already there. So what is growth hacking? Now we came to talk about it.
To me, growth hacking is data-driven marketing, and that has been around for decades. So it's not new, but it's just a new name. So the word growth hack in itself is a growth hack because all of a sudden it became popular. Growth hacking to me is marketing in the entire funnel. So not just look at, is this ad clicking, but are these customers that will stay retained? So do we get long-lasting relationships with these customers? To me, that is growth hacking, listening to customers and see how we can increase motivation and decrease friction. And you can do that in radio ads. You can do that in digital ads. I think it's because we have more data, and data is cheaper now. That's why growth hacking took off, because you can actually measure in a funnel. You can see if someone clicked on an ad for the growth podcast, and then if they actually listened to a podcast and stuff like that. So it's data-driven marketing.
So what gets measured gets achieved. Is that kind of the basic rules?
Yeah, I think so. And also, what is the end goal? I think the goal shifted further in the funnel. So before it was, okay, we need a conversion. So we need a transaction, and that's it. And then we started looking at retention more. And then we started looking at, okay, so who are the top 5% of power users? And then if you have a feedback loop from the power users back to your ads, I think that's growth hacking.
Where did you learn this? By reading books, following courses?
Well, as I said, I learned it by doing. So we were just building ads, and my co-founder at the time knew how to build ads, and we started reading up on that. So just online articles and then trying. And I think from studying the combination of law and philosophy, I think really helped, because one is quite practical and the other one is quite theoretical, but both have a structure. So it's that approach. What's our goal? What do I want to achieve? And how can I create a plan that gets me to that goal?
So you really look at the goal and try to reverse engineer
definitely.
What it needs to get there. Yeah.
So I can give you an example of what I think is a prime example of what growth hacking is. So philosophy had 5-week semesters and law had either 4 or 6. So there was an overlap. And there was one time where I had, I think, 8 exams in 1 week and even 2 exams at the same time. So there was an overlap and I couldn't study for all of them. So then I figured out, okay, how am I going to do this? So I created a plan. And the last exam is I'll just try it. And I didn't follow the lectures. I didn't read any of the books. And so my record of passing an exam is with 6 hours of studying. So I went from 0 to passing it in 6 hours. Not by reading all of the books, but by I had all of the old exams plus answers. So I actually studied that, because most material that we get taught in university is not good stuff to create questions, exam questions about. In other words, it is important to know that when you become a barrister, but not if you pass an exam. And my goal was not to become a barrister, but to pass the exam. So what I did is I got, so the 6 previous years, I got the exam results. So the default answer by the professor, I just looked at those and I could see that there was a pattern that he kept rotating questions. So I just memorized those questions and I scored a 6 out of 10 because I had a perfect score on the questions that were old. I literally word by word verbatim wrote the answer that was his default answer. And then one question was new and I didn't have a clue. So my answer was, this is a new question.
Yeah. Almost inception. Yeah.
So and to me, that is really trying to figure out what is my goal here is to pass an exam. And that's how I did it.
Yeah. So you really think about, okay, what's needed here and how can I do that in the most efficient way? How did you use those techniques, principles, strategies later on? Do you have an example of another project that you you aced or that together with a client or something that really springs to mind?
Well, there's loads of things. So to me, growth hacking is also seeing what is hidden in plain sight. So there's a lot of stuff that my customers don't see anymore because they see that every day. So for me, with a fresh pair of eyes, that really helps. And I always ask the why question. So it's either there is a customer group or some asset in the funnel that is performing really well, but has almost no traffic. In other words, so let's say the power users are women in their 40s that want to lose weight.
Yeah.
In the data and by talking to customers, you can figure out they have the highest retention, the highest customer lifetime value. So those are the users you want to go after. But there's a lot of friction in the funnel because the ads are too generic and you get all sorts of people in, not just this power user group. And then it's, so one of the questions is, what do you spend most of your time on in terms of developing stuff in your funnel? And then, I mean, this is an example. Then it's like men in their 50s. And then I looked at the data. It's like, and who are your best customers? Yeah, women in their 40s. Okay, so why are you spending 95% of your time on men in their 50s where your group should be women in their 40s? And usually that's a, yeah, that's interesting. To me, it's, as I said, hidden in plain sight. It's most of the time we do things because they worked before, but I challenge that to see if, are they still working? And if something's working, don't change it. But if something can be improved, then improve it.
How do you think that happens? Is it just a human thing to when you're longer in a job or in your business that you just don't see things anymore? Or is it perhaps even a matter of not bringing everything that you have and all your mental powers into your work?
When you learn a skill, if that's digital marketing or whatever skill it is, I think at a certain moment you become proficient enough in the skill that you don't have to think about it that much, because otherwise your brain would explode. So I think it's normal. The way we learn is that you're less aware about the things you're doing. But I mean, definitely it's also the longer you're in a project, the less you can see it from a beginner's mindset. So there was one project that I was doing for more than a year. And that, I mean, there definitely were some diminishing returns at the end. And then we addressed that. So the client said, well, I mean, I think your playbook is done. We're not seeing as much of a growth in conversion rates as we were seeing in the past 13 months. Maybe we should get another CRO expert in with a different point of view and see if we can change stuff there. I think so. That is the correct mindset. So it's seeing yourself as an executioner and as your own manager. And as your own manager, you can fire your executioner self. It's the fact that this job has to be done. The conversion rate needs to go up. It's more an ego thing to say, I have to solve this problem. So to me, that is a distinction that I think is very powerful. Is, am I the right person to fix this problem?
And how do you do that? Let's make a shift to our personal life, to your personal life. Do you see that happen as well in your personal life? Do you sometimes use a friend, a coach, a mentor, someone to just be critical?
Yeah, so a good friend of mine, Jack, he, like, usually talking to him, he can really structure stuff. Like, if I'm stuck in a mental loop, then. So for me, it works two ways. So one is, like, he's really good at structuring stuff and giving me options to solve the problem. But also by just saying it out loud, by just talking to someone and talking through the problem helps me to structure it.
Yeah. And you have to choose words to describe it, and you see perhaps your own loophole.
And another way I do it is by writing things down. So if you write things down or if you say them out loud, you can see how ridiculous some thought patterns are. And then basically, so, and then I just laugh at myself. It's like, okay, wait, this does not make any sense. To me, that helps.
You do that with journaling as well, right? You have a weekly journal that you do, perhaps even daily, or at least weekly.
Yes, it's weekly.
And then you see sometimes patterns or you see inconsistencies, and then you can just
read
through them.
So one thing is, at the beginning of the year, I wanted to improve my writing. So that's why I started this personal blog. And it's really fun to see how I'm progressing in that. So it was, when I read stuff from, let's say, February, it's so much more unfocused and less structured than now. And every time I look back at myself a month prior, then it's like, oh my God, this is so bad. But that's fine because that means that there was improvement. Yeah, so definitely writing things down. And then, so what I do is in my weekly review, I write a diary, like a journal, with personal stuff as well. So it's not structured. I usually, what I do is just follow the week. So on Monday, this happened, this is how I felt. And then I go through the week. And that's really helpful to read that every quarter, every year. So I do an annual review and then I read through all of those weekly reviews. And then you really have your year in feelings and stuff that happened.
Yeah, to go back to an interesting story that you shared with me, because I know for a fact that you have been also kind of growth hacking during your your years of an entrepreneur. You've been living in several countries that you really wanted to live in the winter. I think you lived in several different continents. Yeah, how did you do that? Combining living in Holland, living in other countries. How did it go?
I think that happened by accident as well. So the first companies, so the digital marketing agency became part of that media company, and then we sold it to that media company. So after my first exit, I went traveling. So I went to Costa Rica on a planned trip. So at first I wasn't this, let's take a backpack and go traveling and we'll see kind of person. But I love being in Costa Rica. So that was really great. And then the year after that, we were going on a trip with a fraternity group. So we had a trip planned to South America. And then one of my friends in that group said, I want to stay longer and I want to go to Cuba. Do you want to join? And that's just how it, same with being an entrepreneur. It's like, hey, I'm going on this journey. Do you want to join? It's like, yeah, sure. So went to Cuba, loved it. Decided to stay longer, and it basically started from there. And then it hit me. It's like, oh wait, I can make money in Europe, and then I can live in either Asia or South America, and my money is worth so much more here. Yeah. So then it really clicked. And Tim Ferriss in the 4-Hour Workweek has this exercise of what's the worst thing that can happen, and I sort of stumbled on that. So I didn't do that exercise of what's the worst thing that can happen, but it's just, oh wait, this is possible and it's really viable. So then, I just started doing more trips.
And you worked just on those trips? Yeah, when you also shared with me the negative side, because a lot of people are just in their daily jobs in Europe, in Holland, and they see digital nomads, living the life, being great in nature, great weather, but you also encountered the negative side of it, right?
Yeah, definitely. So when you go traveling, you take your emotions with you, and it magnifies them. So most of the trips, I felt great, and it was such a good time. But I also had some of the downsides. So what I was doing, I was doing revenue share deals with companies. So if I would grow their company, I would take a percentage of that growth. We're doing a portfolio company with multiple companies, portfolio strategy. So we're working on 5 companies, and then somehow things went wrong and I started losing a lot of money because I was working with a team of freelancers all over the world. Mm-hmm. And then I was just trying to fix that problem because the income dropped and the costs kept running. And then I just started working maybe 20 hours a day. I just tried to solve it by working more, which is in hindsight silly, but I wasn't thinking that through. Yeah, so I was quite stuck and I was by myself in Bali. And that just made things way worse. So just grinding through, I had someone in South America, most of my team in Europe, and then someone in Asia as well. So then I had different time zones I could work, and I did. And that didn't solve the problem. So that was really bad. And I just wanted to go home. I just wanted to go home, but I couldn't.
You wanted to get out of that situation, probably.
Yeah. So that's one situation. And then in that same thing, I traveled to Sri Lanka. I was heartbroken. So I had personal stuff as well. And I just felt shit. And I was in a surfer paradise. So I just figured I'm just going to take a holiday and I'm going to go to the surfer place. And then I got ill. So I had to go to a hospital with a tuk-tuk on an unpaved road for 45 minutes in, 45 minutes out. Like the most disgusting little hut you've ever seen. And every day my the blood values were going down. So it's like, well, if you go below 360, you need to go to a hospital. And again, I was in Sri Lanka, and then you're not fit to fly. I was having a fever, like I was feeling so shit. And I felt locked in that in paradise. So to me, that was like I felt terrible. And then and that's the worst that can happen. So I got ill. I was stuck by myself in this little hut without AC, had a fever. Like my health was deteriorating. It's like, this sucks. But then I remember sitting on the beach and had a mental breakdown. And it's like, I got myself into this situation so I can get myself out. And in the end, I think that is the right mindset to just, you are capable of solving problems, even though you don't have the solution right now. And I think that is in the end the mindset you should have when you go traveling or start a company.
Because you go to terrains that you don't know about, and it might be on yourself in entrepreneurship or while traveling. Yeah, you don't have your family or support group next to you.
So there's this sentence I read once, is, but what if it's a gift? So this shit situation, me sitting on the beach there feeling miserable, is, but what if it's a gift? And it was, because that was that helped me, and that experience made me grow. So I'm still thankful for that happening. So the lesson there is I'm really stubborn. And sometimes I'm wrong, and sometimes other people are right. So that's a lesson. And sometimes I can't control everything, and sometimes things don't go my way. So it was a lesson in ego.
And even then you can still get out of it and see it perhaps as a blessing in disguise.
Definitely. Yeah.
I'm really interested about, we were already talking about growth hacking and personal life a little bit. I also know that you have been doing a period without alcohol, for instance. I'm not sure if that is growth hacking, but it's probably a way for you to enhance your sharpness and your mental capabilities. Can you share with me a little bit the strategy that you use next to journaling to get better every day?
So I use this framework of 100-day sprints. So I plan everything in quarters, but it doesn't necessarily have to be a calendar quarter, but it's just 100 days, because 100 days is long enough to actually achieve something of importance, but it's short enough that you have to start now. So it's actionable and impactful. So I do that. And then based on that journaling, I look at stuff that is not going well and that I want to improve, or stuff that is going well and that I want to maintain. So basically that's how I do it. And the sprint of quitting drinking was also a 90-day challenge of not drinking. And then let's see what happens. And I enjoyed that so much, how I felt and the energy I had and the focus, that I continue doing that.
So it brought you so much more than the pleasure of drinking.
Definitely. And the thing is also, I'm not a man of balance. So it's either all in or nothing. So to me, with drinking, it's either all in. So we're going to have a crazy night or nothing. Like, I can't have two glasses of wine and that's it. So I think that is part of it. So that is who I am. I'm not balanced. I'm also not balanced in work, and that's fine. So in that sense, this works for me. I wouldn't say this works for everyone, but it definitely worked for me.
It doesn't mean when you're not balanced in drinking, for instance, you have probably a great night, but the next day, perhaps even in the following 2 days, you have need to recover. Yeah, is it the same thing with working very hard, that you work hard? Me, myself, I work hard as well as an entrepreneur, but I know that I have to relax better than probably the average person to have the yin-yang a little bit.
Yeah, so that's one of my challenges, is to turn off, especially now working from home. I have a good setup with a good desk, and it's easy to work long hours.
Yeah.
That's a balance I'm trying to find. And for now, it's fine. So in Corona time, I stopped going to the gym because the gyms were closed, and I just filled that up with work. So it's just working loads and focused on a project. So when the lockdown started, I thought, I want to look back on this time to create something. In other words, what if this is a gift? Because it's a shit situation, but what is the best we can make from this situation? So I learned, so I started writing more, and I learned how to build my own website. So I just spent my mornings on that, besides working on the business. And that was really fun.
And what else changed for you during Corona? Did you start walking more like a lot of people, or doing other things?
Well, we have a dog, I mean my fiance, but we take the dog for walks daily anyways. So usually after work, we would go walk with the dog. But my gym regime definitely dropped. So again, I'm all in or nothing. So I went to the gym 5 times a week with Corona, and then I just stopped completely.
And now you're starting to pick it up again?
3 times a week. So I'm trying to balance it now.
Yeah, if you looked into the future a little bit, I guess you are thinking about long-term goals and objectives as well. What are some things that you would really like to achieve?
One of the things I'm working on is financial independence. So there's this movement called FIRE, financial independence, retire early.
Yeah.
That is something that I'm thinking about and working on. I'm not sure about the retire early bit, because I really enjoy my work.
Yeah.
But I'd like to be able to be financially independent, and the freedom that gives me.
And then are you saving up more money now? Or is it, are you just first trying to make more money and then start saving more?
Both.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to increase income and lower expenses.
Yeah. And then invest the money, index funds mostly. Is that the plan?
That's the traditional way of doing it. I have a more aggressive investment strategy. I put it all in crypto. So especially in March, when the whole market plummeted, I doubled down on that. So I put more money in. But what I'm looking at now is I'm reading into buying real estate not to live in, but to as a rental property.
Yeah.
So that is now a project. So I approached that as a project as well. So a friend of mine who's in real estate, he gave me a book. So I'm going to read the book. Based on that, I'm going to talk to people and then see if I want to do that.
And real estate is safer, right, than crypto, probably.
Well, and I mean, I can share a lesson about that. Is Q1 of 2018, so February or March or something. I lost 90% of the complete value of my investment portfolio. I was okay. I mean, it sucks, but I was okay with that because I was in it for the long term anyways. So for me, that's okay. to take risks because I don't have a mortgage yet. I don't have any children. So if I would lose it all, it's fine because I have that upside, but it's definitely not for everyone.
Did you still have some savings or some kind of emergency fund at the time?
It depends on what you know. The short answer is no. I mean, I did have some spare cash also in my holding company. So in the end, I can always manage in those situations. But no. And so in other words, I was overexposed. I realized that I'm fine with that. And
so you're taking risks, but you're thinking more and more of, okay, what if everything fails? A little bit like how Tim Ferriss approaches it, both in life and in finance. You're trying to do that more and more. Still reaping the benefits of taking risks without a risk, no reward. But if everything fails, then you have still a backup plan or backup plan, safety net. Yeah.
So I really think about that. And I think the safety net of my parents in an emotional sense, I mean, definitely helps as well. So my parents have always supported me through almost all of the decisions. There's one I can recall where they're like, are you sure that's a good idea? And then I really thought about that. Well, they usually support me in anything and everything. So that made me think. But yeah, it's like, okay, so if you want to be an entrepreneur, go for it. It's your life. I think that emotional safety net is really important to be able to take these risks and be okay with them.
Yeah, awesome to have that support and also open line of communication. You talked about your financial goals and business-related goals.
Well, so I can share something about that. I used to have the goal of €1 million in revenue.
Yeah.
That was the goal. But I've now realized that that is a vanity metric. First of all, profit is way more important.
True.
Because you can have a company that's not making any money when it has €1 million in revenue. So I used to have this, and again, reading through these annual reviews or annual goals that I still have from 2016, the goal was always 1 million, 1 million, just because that's a magical number. And then I was thinking, well, is that what I want? And is that attainable? And do I actually have a plan to reach that goal? And most of that is out of my control anyways. So I dropped that goal and that makes me happy. So I do have an MRR goal, but then in terms of result, so in terms of profit. Mm-hmm. In other words, my goal is to have a passive income coming in that I can pay my rent with, and then that's it.
Yeah.
And that means why I want that is because that gives me more time to learn and improve my writing and just stuff that I improve myself basically and share that with whoever wants to read that. So to me, so that's one thing is I told you before is I looked at the end goal in growth hacking, but actually I wasn't doing that in my revenue goal because the goal should have been profit. And then a goal was also not a strategy. So saying I want to reach €1 million in revenue, if you don't have a plan, it's just a silly dream or a silly statement on a piece of paper. It doesn't do anything. In other words, you need to have a plan as well. So I feel like I have a better plan for that now. And as I told you, I'm less planning for annual goals. I do have a long-term goal, like where I see myself going. But for the rest, it's just those 100-day sprints really is long enough for me to see what happens next. Because you'd never know what's going to happen anyways.
And do you believe more in knowing your exact 100-day goal and then just, like I said before, reverse engineer it? Okay, then I know what I need in week one, week two, week three. Do you also just let go of the how a little bit? Approaching it a little bit more spiritually almost, okay, I've set the goal, I cannot predict the future, I'm just gonna do what feels right. Or is that totally not you and should everything be logical?
Yeah, it should be logical and meticulously planned. So in that sense, I don't leave much to chances. It's, I definitely have a plan. So I also, I feel restless if I'm not sure what the next step is. So what I usually do, as you said before, is for those 100 days, I break it up into monthly sprints and then into weekly sprints. So then for coming week, what are the things what can I do that brings me closer to my monthly goal? And the monthly goal brings me closer to my 100 day goal.
Yeah, I've seen that you're becoming more active also in the personal branding thing. You already mentioned that you started writing more. Is that also some kind of impact that you want to have on others, that you want to share vulnerability? What is your, in other words, what is the contribution that you want to have in your work in the coming years, at least?
So it started because I've been teaching at the Talent Institute since 2015. So I've been doing that for 5 years, and I really enjoy that. I really enjoy helping people and share knowledge. So it's just because I love doing that. And then another medium is writing stuff. So that's bringing those two things together. And this was also a sprint. So I was talking to a friend of mine, Michel Ariens, and he said, yeah, we should. So we were sharing some stuff that we were reading or listening to, or YouTube videos, whatever. It's like, we could do that. We have the same knowledge and background and experience. Yeah, we should. And it's always been this lingering should have project. And then, okay, well, let's put our money where our mouth is and let's do it. So we said we're going to record 6 podcasts together about personal branding. I didn't have a clue about personal branding. So maybe this is a way of growth hacking it as well. As he had done it before. He builds brands for companies. Okay, so talk me through this. How will I do this? So we were documenting the process itself. So what I was doing is deliberate practice. So, okay, I want to be better at personal branding. Let's put this in a sprint format and let's see how I can do that in 100 days. Awesome. So that's how I approach it. And the things I write is usually the things I like to read as well. So there are a few, let's say, honest marketers who share both sides of marketing, stuff that went well, stuff that went wrong, but also in personal life. And I think that's just very interesting to read. So it's weird for me to sometimes share these things, but I think if you get to the bottom of it, I think you can get to a human or personal level and emotional level, and everybody can then relate to it. And it makes the message just so much more powerful.
How do people react? Do you have some first reactions already? Probably.
Good reactions. So I told you in another conversation you and I had that I was a bit demotivated after my holiday because I had no traffic at all. Because I did schedule some LinkedIn messages and a newsletter, but for the rest, the traffic just went down. And it's like on my personal blog, I had like 60 sessions in a week when I was on holiday, and no one signed up for the newsletter. And it's like, why am I doing this? And this is exactly the resistance that Michel told me would come. So that's why I need intrinsic motivation. It's like, why am I doing this? And no one's reading it. So this is one of the thought patterns. It's like, everything sucks. I'm so stupid for doing this. And then I spoke to Aaron Merck, and he's like, wow, like I love those articles. And he could name by heart 3 articles that he read and the things that he liked about it. He's like, wow, this is so great. He actually read it. And he said, yeah, I got some insights from it. So then, it clicked. It's like, even if it's just Aaron reading those things, then I've added value by sharing my insights. So then it's worth it.
You're also doing it for yourself, right? Partly to get better and to just express yourself.
True, but I wouldn't be a growth hacker if I wouldn't have goals to grow the website and, you know. But I'm learning in what works for me. Perfectionism is definitely part of that. So posting on LinkedIn is like, there's 6,000, 7,000 people who possibly read this. So then I'm really overthinking it. And then, oh, wait, first of all, not everybody sees this. Second of all, you're part of this massive timeline. And even if it's a shit message, not everybody will read it. And almost no one will care. And it's just practice. So just keep doing it. To conclude that argument is, so one thing I'm doing now with Misha is I told him, it's like, yeah, I'm having difficulty posting on LinkedIn. So what I just told you is like, I'm not sure if people will like it. It's like, I was just way overthinking it. And then he said, okay, let's do a challenge. 30 days, we're going to post every day. So I think that is part of personal growth as well, is if there's resistance, go into that resistance, do more of it. And then you will figure out that, and there's on the other side of fear is nothing. You can just go through. It's definitely not my comfort zone. And then, so I'm reading on LinkedIn now, and it's like, why do people post these messages? And then it's like, I'm posting the same crap. Like, why? But it's part of entertainment, and it doesn't have to be a 10 out of 10 long form article every time.
No, it's better to do and just and learn from it, get better.
Definitely. Yeah.
Then let everything be a kind of a mental thing of, okay, how should it be? How would it have been?
And that's fun to set these challenges for myself. For example, with not drinking, that's also a challenge. And then it's like, okay, this is the game I'm playing now. And then I can go all in into that game.
So also in that respect, you're in a way trying to take a step back and see yourself having an experience, having a period of growth, and perhaps see it, even if it gets hard, as a gift, as something that you still need to learn and get better at.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And yeah, so again, is I'm just challenging myself, because when I, as I said before, when I read articles from February, it's like, what was I doing? But that is a building, that is a step, that is a building block of this process.
Yeah.
It actually would be worse if it would be the same quality.
Yeah.
Because then I wouldn't learn anything.
Oh, wouldn't have grown. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this is the growth mindset, is just start doing. And even if it fails now, it's not permanent. It's just, one moment.
Absolutely. And this growth mindset has this really weird paradox in it. So this is both in marketing and in personal branding or in life. In marketing, you could still say, I don't identify with this experiment. This landing page is not me. I've made it, but it's not me. But with a personal brand, it's much harder to differentiate between the brand that I'm putting out there that is based on me, but it's just a part of my personality. So the weird paradox is, we have to be confident enough to think that we can improve, although we say we criticize everything that we're doing. It's important to distinguish between that shit article from February has the right to be there because it's part of that process. And
it's a data point
to look back. Exactly. Exactly. So it's good to look back at that, those previous experiments, and say, oh, that was silly, or oh, that failed, but what can we learn from it? And again, in personal life, you can do the same, but it's much harder to keep that distance.
Yeah. I've written down a lot of key lessons from this interview. What gets measured gets achieved. Manage your downside risk. Some of the lessons I made from it, especially from living in Sri Lanka, but also when you are investing your money, get better daily, have an emotional support group. Yeah, and make sure you do some kind of sprints, 30 days or 100 days, to get better and to probably reach your goals.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And so an article I'm writing right now is about internet security. This is about managing your risks. Is things I'm thinking about is, what if I get hacked and I have access to all these things, what happens then?
Yeah.
In other words, so then I look at the downside. Okay, what are the possible ways that I could get hacked? or what are the possible ways that we know now how crypto can get stolen? And then I just mitigate that risk. So I just make sure that I have the maximum security, because the worst thing that can happen is that everything gets stolen, because you can't come back from it being stolen. You can come back from losing 90% of the value because the market can go back up. So that is the risk that I'm trying to prevent.
You also create almost scenarios for those situations.
Yeah.
So if that happens, you know what to do.
Yeah, definitely. So I try to think about all the things that could happen. For example, my cousin works for our agency as a part-timer, but then maybe he is the weakest link in the system. So I should not look only at my security, but I should look at his security.
Mm-hmm.
And then so I usually approach things as systems. So it's not just my perspective of my computer being safe, but it's also everybody in that chain.
Interesting. Yeah. I also brought it up because I read one of your blogs about digital nomading and then how to make sure you always have in a separate vault your passport and money and a second SIM card, all those things. So that made me think, okay, you probably do this for in other situations as well. Think about, okay, what happened? What if things go wrong, what can I do? Yeah, I think I should do that a little bit more. In the end, I think it's also important to think about, okay, if all things fail, if I lose all my money, I'm still safe. But it doesn't mean that you should prevent certain things from happening. So if your phone gets stolen, okay, what to do then? Make sure your documents are in the cloud, not on your laptop. All those basic things are, I think, just very useful to just have a comfortable and safe life.
Definitely. And so with breaking and entering, or like people stealing stuff from your house, usually the advice the police gives is just make sure that your house is safer than your neighbors, because then they will go for the path of least resistance and they will rob your neighbors, not you. Although that sucks for your neighbors, but that's it. So one thing you can do is make sure you do not have, so level one is make sure you do not have the same password for everything, because databases get hacked. So LinkedIn was hacked in 2018. If your LinkedIn password back then is the same as your Gmail, they will try and get in. One is don't have the same passwords. Two is on your critical things like email, LinkedIn, and other social medias, set up 2FA, which is you get an SMS code with an extra password. So even though I know your password is I love my baby 123, then I still need that second code, and that second code changes every time. So you can either use an app called Google Authenticator or those SMS messages. And for 90% of the population, that's enough, because that means they will go for someone who has the same password on everything.
Your neighbor.
And exactly, your neighbor. And this applies to businesses especially, because I have so many customers who share passwords with me, and it's the same password for everything. And interns have the same password. Interns that don't work there have the password. That is a risk. And that is, if like it's a 1% chance of something happening, but if it happens, has such a negative impact on your business. That is stuff I think about and I try to mitigate.
I think it's always important to think about the risk and the impact. If there's a small risk on a very big impact, you should still do something about it, or at least think about it.
This is actually from personal experience, because I posted a picture on Instagram from Coinbase, like a print screen of the Coinbase app, and based on that I got hacked. So they broke into my personal email. My personal email was the backup email for my business email, so they changed the password to my business email. Based on being in my email, so they changed both the passwords. They started sending out emails to all of my contacts saying, I've been hacked, download this free virus scanner, which was the virus. They reset my password on LinkedIn, started DMing everyone in my contact list. That is some scary stuff.
Yeah.
And that's definitely something. So in the end, I was able to regain access to my accounts, because by accident I was still logged into a specific thing, so I could prove to the Google customer support that I was the owner of this account.
Yeah.
But I could have lost access to my Google Drive, my Gmail, everything.
And that sucks.
And that sucks.
So I want to conclude this interview. I think a good conclusion would be, grow every day, but also think about, what could go wrong, and make sure you find a scenario for that and fix it before it happens.
I think that's a very good conclusion.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for having me, Leonard.
Yeah, it was great having you here and talking longer. So many great insights and things that you shared. Thanks a lot. And definitely see you soon.
See you soon. All right. Have a nice day. Bye.
Yeah.